Today on Movie World, as we talk about The Bride and Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Here we are again.
Yes.
Back together.
Yeah, and Yazdi's bought more evil.
Oh, I haven't opened that one.
Yazdi's bought more delicious evil.
It'll change your life.
It's like cake, it's delicious. Yazdi, what is this called?
Whoa. I don't love cake.
No, this is very good. Yes, what is this?
Try that one then.
It's some rice snack which came. It came with a big box which had all kinds of goodies for
you
the.
Hold it up to.
For the Lunar New Year.
Okay.
So it's really nice.
There was literally no English.
There was no English in it.
Maybe we should use Google Translate for the label.
Correct.
Ask ChatGPT.
It's delicious. Right. We have a nice array of like Asian snacks.
Yes.
Interesting snacks. It's really good, right?
It's kind of like a Rice Krispies treat.
Yeah, it looks like that, but it's more like melty. Cake.
More cakey, though.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's a Rice Krispies treat makes like a vanilla cake.
Yes.
It's like if you took a Rice Krispies treat and dunked it in a lot of milk.
Yes.
And it softened.
With some vanilla.
With some vanilla, yeah.
It's very good.
That makes it sound terrible. It's really? Better than that.
Okay.
Yes. And then, Yasti, you have to try these delicious
ginger things.
I don't like ginger, but there are these ginger.
I love everything.
This has
ginger.
Got, look, if you can even see the strands of ginger, which our dear friend Helen gave us. Because Joe said, I love these. So she handed us all these, like, jelly sweets.
Ooh,
it's very good. It will take your head off.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, I want to see your face.
Very
I think we
gingery.
Should do it on camera.
I love ginger.
See, I don't.
And then I'm going to hold up Katie's Wunderland, which Jesse very kindly shared.
Yes, it's from Germany.
These are some German vegan jelly, like they're like
Haribo-like.
Yeah, Haribo things, but they're super good.
So, and thank you to Yazdi's neighbour,
yes. So.
And then we
thank
have these,
too.
Which I love. They're called Choco Rolls.
Oh, you're going all the way.
I'm going all the way.
You're
these
not saving anything
rolls.
For the next podcast.
Oh, okay.
There
they're
is
called
another
Mixed
podcast.
Berry. They're very good.
Oh,
Choco Rolls.
I will try
these
that
are really
the
good.
Next
you, I think this is good.
Okay.
And Joe, you made us a delicious cup of tea.
He did.
It
was so good.
I don't
I'm
want
already
it to
missing
end.
It.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to have another
There's
one.
So little, I'm already missing it.
Let's record the show and maybe,
okay,
if
maybe
you're
again.
Good, if you do a good job, I'll make you more
yes.
tea.
Yes.
Good.
Really?
It's majorly ginger, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's like...
It's great. If you're ever nauseous, you should have this.
If you fart, it will smell like ginger. That's how strong it seems.
How much better can your fart get if it tasted like ginger?
Okay, Movie Wallers is brought to you by sugar and gingery farts.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, it's very good. I like it.
Oh, dear.
No, they're good, aren't they? Yeah. We have to ask her where she gets them from. I think she gets them from like a Vietnamese
I think so, a Vietnamese supermarket. It was very kind of her to give us a whole bunch of...
Yeah.
Interesting fruits. Oh, this is... Oh, sorry, just before we go. What is this one called?
I don't think
it's
I've
called
tried that
Dak Biet, which is custard apple, which she also gave us, which I can't remember having a custard apple. It was delicious.
You've never had a custard apple?
No, it was delicious.
It was really good,
Now, this is a custard apple jelly sweet candy.
Yeah. I'll try that one later.
You can try that one later. Okay.
Okay,
enough,
let's get to
enough
business.
Sugar.
Okay, yes, indeed. We'll be bouncing off the walls for the rest of this podcast. Thank you to all of those who contributed snacks.
Yes.
We've got such nice friends that contribute snacks.
And Yazdi.
And
Yazdi.
And Yazdi, yes.
He doesn't count. Yeah. He's a
podcaster.
He's a
movie waller.
Yeah, he's a movie waller.
This is true.
Get no credit for your snack deliverance, like I do for my tea. Okay. Two movies to talk about. This week, The Bride and Kill Bill, the whole bloody affair. It's
no, we didn't pick
before
Netflix
we do
picks.
That, we do our recommendations.
Hold your horses.
Sorry.
Okay.
I was going to get there.
Okay.
What?
Just in case you forgot.
I was just going to sew the two together with...
A segue.
The character in Kill Bill is known for much of the movie as The Bride.
Yes.
And The Bride is also out of the movie.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
All right. But yes, before we go though, we do have time to do our segment of I Can't Find Anything to Watch on Video On Demand. This is our service to you, the listeners. This is how we pay you back for listening. We will pick a movie that hopefully you haven't seen Or if you have seen, well, just letting you know that it's available on one of the streaming services. So what have both of you got in your respective queues?
Okay, I'm going to do a cheat this time like you normally do. So I was going to recommend Bridgerton Season 4 Part 2 because I recommended Season 4 Part 1 last time and Part 2 came along and it was very, very good. But I figured you'll find that yourself if you're a Bridgerton fan. So instead, I'm going to recommend this lovely little movie that came at the end of
2025.
End of 2025.
Towards the end of
Very towards the end. Called Ellen the Great. I think we reviewed it during our kind of end of year 25. It stars June Squibb, the amazing June Squibb, Erin Kellyman, and Chiwetel Ejiofor, amongst some others. And it's a really cute movie about an old lady that ends up having to move to New York to live with her daughter and just how she ends up saying something that ends up in the end getting her into trouble. But it's more about an unlikely friendship between an old, really much older lady, like someone's grandmother, and a young girl.
Yeah. And I think I love the movie. I think we both saw it in the theater.
We did. I think it was during like last year's Oscar
fodder.
But I think this movie is also notable because it is the directorial debut of Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, correct. Thank
you, Scarlett Johansson directed this movie.
Yes.
And it's very auspicious because the movie is about what it is, which it is about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But there's a very workmanlike quality to it.
Yeah.
It just gets the job done.
Yeah. And it's got great characters. And it's funny. It's funny. It gets heavy, but it's funny.
Yeah, and it's about, you know, the burdens of the past.
Yeah.
And sometimes you say a lie and in the moment, and then you have to kind of keep carrying that lie forward.
Yeah,
and the consequences weighs you down.
That both of you enjoyed that.
Yeah,
I didn't
very
get to
good.
See that in the
so
review,
it's on so Netflix.
That's my chance.
Yep, Netflix.
Yes.
Good choice. Eleanor the Great.
Eleanor the Great.
Yes.
Yes, Dee.
For my recommendation, I'm going to ramble for a minute, but I'm going to come to the movie I get to. And I stumbled upon something. I knew about this, but I had never really ventured into it. Mm. As you guys know for sure, and as many of our listeners might know, once a month, we do a segment on KPBS
Midday Edition.
Yes.
It's called Midday Movies. And Beth, our commander who runs it, chose the films of John Woo to celebrate this last week. And I had seen only so many John Woo movies. And she said, watch one which was in Hong Kong and one which was Hollywood. The Hollywood one, I had it covered. We had Face Off and we had, we had all kinds of movies. But I hadn't seen too many of his Hong Kong movies. And the one that I kept seeing was a really good one. Was called The Killer. Now, we talked about that on our Midday Edition segment, but I couldn't find The Killer anywhere to watch. It wasn't on Netflix, it wasn't on Prime, it wasn't on Paramount, it wasn't on Peacock,
it
wasn't
on
HBO. And it turned out it's available for free on Tubi.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
So, I'm here to sing the praises of Tubi. Tubi is, I think, owned by Fox, but whatever it is, whatever their business model is, it's 100% free. And if you don't mind listening to three ads of about a minute and a half each in the middle of the movie.
Which is happening on a lot of the platforms anyway.
Anyways,
yeah.
Tubi is amazing. They have, you know, by the way, the Happy Hour podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR also did a whole thing about Tubi. It's like almost going to a 80s blockbuster in many ways because it has a big trove of 80s and 90s movies, but it also has Ad Astra. It has A Knight's Tale. It has Bewitched. It has Bedazzled.
Oh, wow.
It has, you know, Skyscraper. It has...
So old stuff.
Even newer stuff,
okay.
Right? Some of the newer stuff. It has Armageddon. Yeah, I guess. It has Night Chicks. It has all kinds of stuff. But I love the fact that if many people are like me and they're looking to pare down their subscription services... I think give Tubi a try. It's completely free. And the movie I'm going to recommend from Tubi is the movie In Time, which is a movie.
I love that movie.
With Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried.
Yes.
Which came out, oh gosh, I don't know.
Like in the 7 years ago.
Yeah, 7 or so years ago.
I love that movie.
It's a terrific science fiction movie.
Yeah.
It's about a time in the future where
you have
rich you are determines how long you have to live.
Well, it's a bit more than that. Like, your life is kind of in units on your arm.
Correct.
And it's that's how you game. Earn. Yeah.
Correct.
I really liked
in
it.
In terms of its structure, yeah. That was a fun movie.
It didn't do that well, I think.
It did not do well.
And you get frozen in time.
Yes.
Well, the idea is that you have a certain meter that when it runs down,
you die.
Yeah.
And then you can do things to...
And it's got Cillian Murphy in it.
Yeah,
it's got Olivia Wilde. It's got Matt Bomer.
Yeah.
But Justin Timberlake and Amanda Seyfried are both terrific. So that's the movie I recommend. Go to Tubi. You don't even need to set up an account. You can if you want. And then it has a really good algorithm. It remembers what you watched and recommends other stuff. But if you don't want to even create it, just go to Tubi and you can watch a movie for free, which I think is a wonderful thing in these days.
Okay. Wow, I'm on there now. I have not browsed Tubi for a while. Some great stuff.
They have great stuff. They have...
some really good stuff.
Yeah.
Even some recent stuff, like we have Bones and All from a year or two ago.
Oh, that was a good movie.
Yes.
Wonderful movie.
Ad Astra, which I love. I know you guys don't.
Luca Guadagnino,
I Tonya. That's really good. I Tonya, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
And then Midsommar is on, which came out just a few years ago. I love that one.
How did you find... Oh, so you were just...
Well, I was looking to watch that movie, and I was ready to pay money to watch it, and then it turned out it's free on Tubi.
Cool.
T-U-B-I, not to be confused with Mubi, which is M-U-B-I. And Mubi is a paid service, but it's like $5 a month. Anyway.
Very good.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to stick with Netflix as our streaming service recommendation for this week, which... my pick is going to be the movie Nuremberg. So this was another Q4 2025 award season build-up movie that came and went. It didn't get any real love in the award season. And I think one of the potential Oscar snubs in my mind was Russell Crowe's amazing portrayal of, what was his name?
Nazi Commandant.
Yeah, I forget which one.
He was
Goring, Hermann Goring.
Yeah, the first in line after Hitler.
Yes, that's right. So, I remember we reviewed this a few months ago.
Yeah.
It was not a perfect movie by any measure, but it was a very effective acting vehicle for both Rami Malek and Russell Crowe, who I thought both did really stellar work in the movie.
Yes.
And it opened my eyes to some historical facts around the Nuremberg trials that I didn't really know. You know, I'm not a particular history buff, right? So I don't know, you know, I know my key facts, but I haven't studied World War II and all of those things. So to me, some of this information as it was coming through in its, you know, faction kind of stylized, version of history way, was eye-opening. So I think it's well worth your time. It's a long movie. It's 2.5 hours. So, the beauty of watching it at home is you can spread it over an evening or two. But overall, it's a worthwhile watch. So my pick is Nuremberg on Netflix.
Yeah.
Rashmi, you have? Eleanor the Great.
Eleanor the Great, thank you.
On which service?
Netflix.
Okay, Netflix. And Yazdi, you picked?
I picked In Time on Tubi. And other films to watch on Tubi as well.
Sounds good. All right, let's begin the reason that we're here, which is to talk about two new films, The Bride and Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. I assume, Rashmi, you set these up in that order?
I did.
So let's push the domino down and get going with The Bride.
Oh, and I'm introing that one, yes. Okay, so this is written and directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal. And starring the great Jesse Buckley, who is coming off of all of the Oscar... It's her moment for Hamnet. Hasn't even finished that. Christian Bale, Annette Bening is in. This has a stellar cast. Peter Sarsgaard, Jake Gyllenhaal. And this is based in 1930s Chicago, where Frankenstein asks Dr. Euphronius to help create a companion. They give life to a murdered woman as the bride, sparking romance, police interest, and radical social change. So Maggie Gyllenhaal gave us The Lost Daughter.
Lost Daughter.
And I believe this is her second movie that she's directed and written. So
yes.
What did you guys think of this? Who would like to start off? Yazdi, why don't you?
Yeah. I really like this movie. I think it's a reimagining of the whole Frankenstein universe. We just saw, you know, Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. And most Frankenstein movies tend to be kind of creature features, you know, set in this fantastical time and place. This movie is set in the 1930s. And the premise of the movie is that by the time The Bride of Frankenstein got written, Mary Shelley had already died. And the gist of the movie is, had Mary Shelley been alive, she would have written a very different bride, a bride with a lot more spunk, a lot more agency, a lot more anger and so forth. And it's kind of set into the steampunk 1930s gangster America. It has a very different vibe. Is it a perfect film? No. There were parts of it which annoyed me. But overall, it's so unique in its vision. It's so unique in how it handles the Jesse Buckley, the bride character. I love its take on Frankenstein itself. And I love the fact that this movie gives an opportunity to many great female actors. We'll talk about them to be on the screen. So in spite of its shortcomings, it's a giant plus for me. I love this film.
Joe.
Oh, goodness. This is a messy, shouty thing. Look, I actually found it somewhat tedious because this movie to me has been like overly directed. There's so much direction in this movie. And it's obviously done with a particular voice. Maggie Gyllenhaal is trying to clearly burst onto the movie scene as a director. She's a very credible director because there is nothing but competence everywhere I look. The way it's shot, the way it's written, it feels original, but it's also very messy and chaotic. So I struggled with this one. I struggled to like this movie. In fact, I found it a little dull because of its excesses. I kind of, you know, stepped back from the characters. But I mean, you know, if there's one reason to watch this at all, it has to be Buckley's performance. And we're saying at the in the preamble, we said she's having a moment here.
Yeah.
She's really at the top of her game right now. This is not a difficult thing to do. She's playing multiple...
Easy thing. It's not an easy... You said it's not a difficult
thing. I'm sorry. This is not an easy thing to do. Yeah. She's playing multiple versions of a character. She's got the narrator's job. She's doing a lot of work in this movie, and it's great to see. Again, another one of those movies that I feel glad to have watched but hard to recommend.
Same as what Joe said for me. I found this really difficult to understand as a beginning to end narrative, and I didn't understand actually what we're even watching. Each individual scene, though, is remarkable. Like, there is this amazing scene where they do this dance, almost like a thriller dance, right?
I love the dance.
And it's a lot of chaos and commotion, and it's kind of a running movie. The whole movie is running. We're just running in the dark. It felt like very noirish. Steampunk is a great description, Yazdi. I know what Maggie Gyllenhaal is trying to do, but it just didn't work for me. But again, I think, Joe, like you said, it's something to admire. I think that Christian Bale is amazing. I love the Annette Bening character. Jessie Buckley is doing three characters in one. She's often changing her accent three times in one scene, right? It's incredible. Incredible.
Yeah.
She's kind of playing one character, another character, and then a combined character. So I admire it, but I just didn't... There was so much potential. Like, I saw elements of gender, of power, of... the time, poor versus rich versus poor, you know.
There's some political female
empowerment
stuff, like, woven
trying to kind of show itself, but it's so ambitious. And then there's a whole black and white scene where Jake Gyllenhaal is this kind of old Hollywood
Fred Astaire.
I didn't understand any of the symbolism. I didn't get it. I there's so much in here, but at one point I even fell asleep, I think, for about 15 minutes. Did not keep my attention. So, yeah.
Let's unpack Yazdi's
reaction. Yeah, because it obviously worked for you. Yeah,
so for me it's like a very feminist take on The Bride of Frankenstein. I mean, if you watch the original Bride of Frankenstein movie, The bride is there in the movie for only 10 minutes, and the bride barely says anything. Frankenstein creates the bride, and then the bride is there. She doesn't even, so she's a...
I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
is
so
this
just,
an oldie, like a 1940s?
Yeah, yeah, 1930s.
Boris Karloff era.
Yeah, yeah, Boris Karloff, 1939, okay. 1940.
No, I definitely haven't seen it.
So I think they're correcting that wrong, and they're saying that, if Shelley had written this, Shelley would have written this very differently.
Right.
So I think it's a very feminist take on it, and I think what I really liked about this movie, and I realize I'm in the minority here, is that it is a movie about movies, and I always like movies about movies.
Yeah, that's fair.
In this version, Frankenstein is besotten with cinema, and his favorite thing to do is to go to a movie theater and watch other movies, and that's where the black and white piece comes in. And, you know, you're right, the entire movie is a giant chase scene where Frankenstein and the bride are running away and various people are after them, trying to catch them. And so his kind of... So, by the way, I love the characterization of Frankenstein, because Frankenstein is always seen as this horrible beast, or he's seen as this...
Monster.
Misunderstood, like, you know, the way Jacob Elordi played him. But in this version, Frankenstein is almost sweet, and he's kind of lonely, and he's looking for company, and he's not seeking violence. So it's I haven't seen Christian Bale in about 4 years. So anytime I see Christian Bale on the screen, it's welcomed. And every time while he's being pursued, his kind of happy place is in a movie theater. So I kind of, and my happy place is in a movie theater.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things I like.
Yeah.
And I really like that this movie, you know, the whole, like you said, the whole Annette Bening character is great.
Yeah.
She's there in the beginning. She's there at the end. I like Penelope Cruz. There is that whole feminist thing there too, because she's a secretary who her detective boss won't give her any credit or any opportunity until she kind of outwits him. So there, I agree, it's a lot.
Yeah.
The movie is a lot. And I got annoyed because in some scenes, particularly early on, Jesse Buckley was mumbling three different things for three different characters.
Yeah.
Some of it was in a weird Irish accent. I don't know what accent it was. I was really straining to even, like, which... She's possessed by what character at this point? And what is she saying? Like, what is she saying? She was like, kudos to her for doing like the split personality, three characters in the same scene. But that got to be too much, right? That's what you said. It's overly ambitious. It's like, it's like, look, Ma, no hands, but at what cost, right? It should also be a little bit entertaining. But I love that whole, it's almost like Frankenstein in a gangster movie, in a film noir movie. The other movie it reminded me of was Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes.
Right?
But that's what they are. They are two kind of, you know, two outcasts from the world, and they have committed violence, and the whole world is after them. So I kind of appreciate
and
that.
Here's my advice, if Maggie Gyllenhaal wishes to take it, because, you know, I'm the expert on this. I wish that it had just been... I wish that it had played up either the love story or the revenge story. But we've got a revenge story, a love story, a crime, a gender politics, there's so much going on. I couldn't keep up with it.
Yeah.
None of them were enthralling enough to make me want to hang on to it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I made a couple of notes. Trying to gather my thoughts on this, because I was like, did I like that or not?
It
kind of puzzled me. And I think, you know, one of the things I wrote here was like, every scene seems determined to announce its own style, attitude, and cleverness, right?
Yeah.
She's like constantly trying to like one up the thing that's come before.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's what I mean by over-directed. You know, there's two, and maybe, you know, again, first time filmmaker. We saw it with Dev Patel last year with Monkey Man.
Good reference. Yeah.
You know, this is somebody who works in film. They know what great film is.
Yeah.
You know, we don't doubt that they understand this universe, this environment, this process better than any of us. But I always wonder if, you know, when somebody finally says, okay, you're in charge, you get to direct, right? Is there this sense that you've got to show your entire resume in one movie,
yeah,
for fear of never getting the opportunity again, right?
Sure.
Because I've always wanted to do this in a movie. So, you know, you cram it full of all this stuff, and this one just feels overdone.
Yeah, that sounded like a summing up, unless you have anything more to say, Yazdi.
I mean...
No, go ahead.
So, yeah, I mean, look. Maggie Gyllenhaal, you are incredibly talented. You are a director with such a strong visual sense that I'm really excited to see what else you're going to do. But I think this one was kind of more style over storytelling.
Yeah.
And ultimately that made it kind of disappointing for me because as a movie watching experience, again, like I said in the last podcast, there are movies that I'm really glad I got to see, and I'm really glad I got to see in IMAX and loud in the theater with an audience. But it's really hard for me to tell somebody to go buy a ticket.
At an IMAX
yeah, for $20 and go out. You know, that's a tall ask for me. So this is a 6 out of 10.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I recognize the movie's shortcomings, and I do recognize that it's maybe a tad overcooked. But for me, I would rather see something overly ambitious, overcooked, than something which is slapshot or which is like every other movie playing. I mean, just visually, the movie is so amazing. The production design we haven't talked about,
yeah,
is just exquisite.
It is.
It's just, you know, I want to live in that 1930s that you see. It almost looks comic book-like,
yes,
through most of it. I also like that, and you see this in the posters, that when the bride is reanimated, there is this
black tattoo kind of thing. Yeah.
There's a mercurochrome that she puts in the mouth, and that spills on the side of her cheek.
Brilliant.
And it stains her cheek through the rest of the movie.
Brilliant visual signature.
That. So I loved.
And then other people start copying it. Like there was a really good narration about is that
revolt,
like,
and
yeah, and is that kind of like influencing?
Yeah, it is.
Right. It's kind of a throw to today's. Yeah.
Yeah. So, for me, I think I would rather a movie do too much than do nothing or do a bad job. So I mean, I think the Lost Daughter worked because it was a far simpler movie. She always was in command of it, and that movie's tone is very difficult. But I enjoyed this as much. I just came out very giddy, like, you know, it's something I'd never been seen before. So it's an 8 out of 10 for me.
I really
loved this movie. Yeah,
good
I really
for you,
loved
Yazdi.
It. Yeah.
I think for me, it's somewhere between a 5 and a 6. I'll give it a 6 because I think it's a hardworking movie, but this cake didn't bake for me.
Yeah.
That monster dance was so fun.
It was fun. It was
like
great.
A thriller monster
it
dance.
It was. It
there
was great.
There were so many memorable moments.
It was great.
This movie won't leave me for
like
a while.
Like just the scene of her falling down the stairs.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
It's a challenging piece of work. And I think, you know, again, as long as you know that, I think go see it. You know, and again, you know, Yazdi, your response is well taken here. Yeah. I think it's going to have its proponents, this movie, because it's beautiful. It's really good work.
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's then move to A Bride of a Different Kind, which would be Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. Does this even need an introduction?
Well, I think it does in that people may think it's just a rehash.
So, is that for me to talk about?
No, Yazdi was going to do the intro.
Yes, so okay. I can do the intro. So, you know, obviously, Tarantino has made many movies, but he's made 9 main kind of feature movies. Amongst lovers of cinema, there's always this game you play about what is your favorite Tarantino. For me, Kill Bill is at the top. Kill Bill was originally made in the 1990s, I believe. And when Tarantino presented the entirety of the work to Harvey Weinstein, who was the head of Miramax at the time, Weinstein said, I'm not releasing like a 3.5 hour, 4 hour version of this movie. And between Weinstein and Tarantino, they decided to break up the movie that had been made already into Kill Bill Part 1 and Kill Bill Part 2. And that's how the movie was released, into 2 separate parts. Well, now Weinstein is down the drain, as he should be. And Miramax and the people... by the way, I've been looking for a box set of Kill Bill 1 and 2 for the longest time, and it wasn't available in the U.S., intentionally, because they didn't want people, they wanted them to buy 2 separate ones. So when I went to India, there is a version, Miramax sold it, a version of the 2 combined together. And I have that at home, so I got that from India. But anyway, finally, Tarantino has put both of the movies together, And he's removed a few things. He's added a few. I believe, Rashmi, you're going to talk about
it. I am, yes.
And it is released as a four-hour movie. It was in theaters for a while, and I really wanted to see it, but I missed the opportunity to see it. But it is now available on, or it will soon be available on streaming. It's called Kill Bill, The Whole Bloody Affair. So it's putting both the movies, Kill Bill 1 and Kill Bill 2, together.
Yep.
The cast of the movie is legendary. Uma Thurman's here, Lucy Liu, Vivica A. Fox, Michael Madsen, Daryl Hannah, David Carradine, and many, many others. So yep. I haven't seen this. You guys did.
Yep.
Tell us about The Whole Bloody Affair.
Yeah, and just before we start, so you can purchase it. It's not. It's on what they call premium video on demand. So you can buy it on Apple TV, Amazon Prime, YouTube Movies and TV, or Fandango at Home. That's where it's currently available. But you have to buy it. It's about $19.99.
That's not bad.
It's not bad.
For a four-hour movie.
Before we jump into, I'll tell you kind of what the, a quick summary of what's happened. So in terms of structure, it's edited obviously into a one continuous movie. The Crazy 88 fight is now in full color instead of black and white. The Oren Ishii anime is extended. There are some slightly longer edits on some of the scenes. The music and transitions have been adjusted. And there is an intermission if you choose to have it. So I am a absolute Tarantino fan. And I would put Kill Bill after Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. So it's one of my top, you know, one of my top two. Three movies. I love this. I loved watching this as one whole movie. You know, Joe and I always say, oh, if we had time, we would watch them all together. And I think once we had done a two-parter, we watched Kill Bill 1, and then the next day we watched Kill Bill 2.
Yeah. A few years ago,
and it was fun. Yeah, that was fun to do. This is a really great experience to see the whole film. And I love that he's made some subtle changes. I think the issue I have with it is if you are a super fan, like I am, then you're constantly watching it for the changes. Yeah. So I would say if you can get yourself to the place, don't mentally be looking for the changes. Try and observe it like you are watching it for the first time. I think you'll have a better experience. I think now that I know what all the changes are, which is why I wanted to kind of read them out, now that you know what the changes are, don't look for them. Just try and enjoy the movie for the whole as you can. But I loved it.
Yeah, I have a question, but I'll wait for your comments.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, look, yes, it's kind of your fault that I admire this movie as much as I do.
I love the movie.
We spoke early on in Movie World as about, you know, top movies, and I remember you bringing up Kill Bill, and I loved Kill Bill when it came out, but I didn't quite hold it in as high esteem as, like, my favorite Tarantino, such as Reservoir Dogs was really up
there for
me.
Yeah, that's your favorite.
You know, followed very closely by Pulp Fiction, which I didn't respond to as much as everyone else. But, you know, I went back to Kill Bill because of that conversation. And over the years, it's one of those movies that is syndicated all the time. So you switch on the TV, you can just dip into it. It's highly censored, which is kind of frustrating. Look, I mean, so seeing them as one movie was disappointing in the sense of I don't think it improved the overall experience for me.
Yeah.
Because The bar is so high. This is close to perfection as it is. And in fact, you know, I think that the changes that were made were a little distracting. I mean, I enjoyed the extended anime Oren Ishii scene. I think that added a little bit more context to the character that I think we didn't get to appreciate before. I was disappointed with the Crazy 88 in color. I think that scene is so perfect in black and white.
Yeah.
Because our mind fills in the color.
Yeah.
Right? But here it felt so much more synthetic than it did.
And they added a bit more of those effects.
In black and white. So I don't know that the changes improve the movie. It's hard to say that they detract from it because it's still such a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
But I have to say I don't know that it's better than the sum of its parts.
Sure.
For me, I kind of, in my mind, have always justified them as being two separate movies because they have two very separate tones. Mm-hmm. Like the first movie is more joyful. It's more
funny,
inventive.
It's
funny. There's the animation. There's the black and white. It's funny.
Action.
Whereas the second part gets very dark, and then in her pursuit of revenge, it becomes like an obsession. So I'm wondering when you do watch them back to back, does it jar or it kind of it's an easy transition?
It feels like a sequel. I mean, the part one is the original movie, which is, you know, the setup that we all love, and part two is a full on resolution sequel. To me, at least, for that reason, I think it did feel like separate movies.
Yeah, I would love if we have a listener out there who hasn't seen Kill Bill. If you are one of those people, I would love if someone not, you know, new to the movie watched the whole thing, and then if you had time, watch them separately. Because obviously, you know, it's hard for us because we've watched Kill Bill 1 and 2 as separate movies a number of times.
So many times,
yeah, because we love the movie. So it's hard, like I said, when you're watching it, you're hyper alert about what's changed, what's happening, how am I going to, you know, what's the difference? But I do feel like some bits are cut out, some bits are longer, some bits are shorter. It does flow well. It does flow well. I don't know if I would have the same love of it, you know, that I have.
It's a perfectly paced movie.
It's very good.
I mean, it always has
very
been.
Good.
It always
yeah.
will be.
Yeah. And what a delight that we get to review it again.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that actually upsets me about this whole conversation is that I didn't get to see it in the theatre again. The theatre run of this was ridiculously short. It came and it went.
Yeah.
I think you had like a 1 or 2 week window
if
to do that.
At select cinemas.
You know, unfortunately, I think we were even out of town.
I think we were out of town, yeah.
When that opportunity came. So the heartbreak for me is, like, I don't get to see this as it was originally intended to be seen in the theatre.
I mean, I'm speaking from both sides of my mouth, but I also see from the perspective of AMC or Edwards or whatever, asking people to come and spend half of their waking hour during a day in a movie theater. It's a big ask.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right? So, I mean, you have to set aside 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Or if you go at 6 p.m., it's 6 to 10.
That's
so
a good point.
It's a big
good
ask.
Point.
It's a big ask. So I think commercially...
Totally worth it.
It's totally worth it. Absolutely.
That's a great point.
Tough. Yeah.
Is it worth scoring this one, Joe? I don't know, we can give it a score, right? I think it's just a case of, is this worth watching? Is it worth spending $20?
For me, it's a 9.99 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like, with the original two movie set being both 10 out of 10.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah. It's not greater than the sum of its parts. Yeah. That's a little disappointing to me. But go see it anyway. Like, this movie's fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much lore about it because, like, I think you alluded to this earlier. I think the bulk of what Tarantino made was what is in the first part. And once they decided to split it up, he had to kind of stretch out the second part to make it its own independent second movie. And so it became a little bit more darker and somber and more kind of aching, very talky, very talky.
It's
interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
And if, like you said, if you're so blessed as to have never seen Kill Bill, I envy you. You should watch it.
Yeah.
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 Right.
Okay. So that's going to wrap up today's podcast. We will be back very soon with another podcast on how to make a killing and the very anticipated Project Hail Mary. So thank you once again for listening. We appreciate you. We'll probably go and make some more tea and then have a second podcast coming up. So until next time, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.